from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning, happy Thursday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Let me try this. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G.
Hey!
Hello, everybody. I'm back.
You back!
Yes, I was glad. The irony is not lost on me. So yesterday, I actually had the day off. It was planned because late on Tuesday, I got my second vaccine.
Uh-huh.
And so when I got the first shot, I was told, yeah, usually it's the second vaccine. The person who was giving me the shot said, you know what? You probably want to take the day off the next day just to make sure, you know, if you have any symptoms. Sometimes the symptoms can be a little bit worse on the second time around. You know that I was texting with you guys on Tuesday night saying, should I rescind my vacation or my sick day?
And what did Chef say?
No.
Your own advice,
yeah,
right?
I know. I know. So for the most part, I was bored in the house yesterday.
Okay. So Ursula, you were bored in the house. Keep it a buck. How many of our listeners emailed you and told you that the show was off the rails?
Not off the rails.
What'd they say?
They were saying that, a couple of people said a couple of things that made people upset, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I fully enjoyed listening. I loved being a listener yesterday. It was a ton of fun. You guys did a great job.
By the way, if you told on us, that is narking, not reporting. We established the difference yesterday.
There was something that was brought up. We're going to talk about it coming up at 9:47. Something was brought up. I did have a bunch of time to reflect since I was just sitting in my house. And we'll talk about the symptoms I did feel with this second vaccine because we're all about keeping it real on the show. But
there's one before we get to your top five.
Yeah.
There's one thing that stood out to me. One of our bosses called me yesterday. By the way, that boss is just trying to get brownie points. He never usually calls me. But anyways, that boss called me and he said, oh, how's the show? And I said, the one thing about Ursula not being on the show, I have nobody to protect me from myself.
I know. And there were a couple of times I was thinking, okay, the three of them, they're just egging each other on, and they're about to go over the rails at this point.
You said I'm not a good influence?
No.
We need some moderation.
As a matter of fact, my swearing has gone up more, and that's thanks to you, Chef. Let's get to it. Ursula's top five news stories of the day, brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
Unfortunately, COVID cases here in Washington are still going up, and at least six counties now could find out on Monday if they're going to have to roll back to phase two.
If we feel that because of case rates or because of other metrics that we need to dial back, we will have to do that.
And King and Pierce counties are among those at risk. Health Secretary Dr. Umair Shah says our state is making strong progress on vaccinations, but transmission rates, especially among teens and young adults, are very high in some areas. On April 15th, everyone in our state who is 16 and older will be eligible for a coronavirus shot. And the city of Seattle has now opened pre-registration, but is warning that you will need to be patient.
Gotta get these vaccines, everybody. That's what it is time for. I'm looking forward to it opening up. We talked about this about 2 weeks ago, and we've been saying this. Please open it up so folks can go and get vaccinated. If you've gotten vaccinated, good for you. If you're scheduled to get vaccinated, good for you. If you're thinking about getting vaccinated and you're like, well, I heard, and this person says, listen, go get vaccinated. Now, a lot of you guys are asking questions about me. You're like, but gee. You have COVID. You're right. I do have COVID. But I've also not missed a day on the show. I'm also not in the ICU. I'm not saying that all things like that lead to that. But I just want you to keep that in mind that, yes, there is a possibility of what Dr. Rasmussen and the experts call a breakthrough. But don't you want a little bit of protection? And I will say this one last thing. Yes, I have not missed a day on the radio. Yes, I did do a show from the bed. I just wanted to do it just to say that I did, by the way. But I will want to just tell you this. Even though I got COVID, I had a little bit of comfort as I would go to sleep at night, knowing that I have kids, knowing that I got family, knowing that I have just that little bit of extra protection with the vaccine. I'm going to tell you right now, it's easier to sleep at night when you have COVID knowing that you get the vaccine inside you.
I'm glad you're saying that, because there was a comment, and I did have a chance. I was really updating all the our social media pages, et cetera, yesterday with all the time I had. And I saw a comment about you continuing to work and possibly making COVID look like it's a breeze. And this was from one of our very loyal listeners who also works in healthcare. And she was saying, you know, you're going to make it look like COVID is nothing. It's going to feed the idea that, you know, that some people say it's nothing worse than a cold. Keep in mind that, you had your first vaccine and then got your second one. So you were already starting to feel symptoms when you got your second one. But as you said, because you had the first one, that probably reduced your symptoms by, you know, maybe even up as much as 80%.
Right.
So what you're dealing with right now is because you had that. And let's just make it real clear. Even though now I've had my second vaccine, I have to continue to take precautions. I can't go around maskless. I will still be wearing a mask, and it's not for show. It is because there is still a possibility that I could get sick. Yes, I'll probably not be hospitalized or die, but I not only could possibly get sick, but there's a possibility that I could also still be a carrier. So let's, you know, get that straight. We need to get away from this idea that people are doing it for show. People are doing it to make a statement. It's not a statement. It's really for other people's safety. And quite frankly, it would be for my own well-being as well. So while trying to get a vaccine here is like Hunger Games, it is a very different story on the other side of the Cascades. Thousands of vaccine appointments are available in the Tri-Cities, and according to the Herald newspaper, on most days, the Benton County Fairgrounds has not been able to fill all of its openings. According to the state's data dashboard, 9 of the 10 counties with the lowest vaccination rates are red counties east of the Cascades.
I need y'all to tell us why. I was trying to do my research on this, and I thought to myself, it would be selfish of me to get on the air and look at numbers, right? And the numbers are saying, like you just said, 9 out of 10 counties right now. It is the lowest vaccination rates over in that area. So I do know that we have listeners that are over there. Tell us why. 989-73 is the state roofing text line. Why are folks not going to get vaccinated over there? Ursula, can you explain why?
So, and Danny Westneat wrote a column about this in the Seattle Times, and he pointed out a bunch of things. And then I actually read comments too, because then a lot of times when you read comments, you hear from other people who bring up great points. So among the factors are age demographics. You know, there are a lot more people in Eastern Washington that may have language barriers. They also may have difficulties driving to these vaccination sites that may not be close by. But it's not because there aren't enough vaccines. And again, people who've worked there have texted me and said, we've got a lot of extras over here. So there are some people who are driving from here over there. But these surveys show also that more Republicans are reluctant to get the vaccine, especially Republican men. And if you look at the Franklin County's Republican Central Committee post on Facebook, when it comes to the topic of vaccines, basically one post says the government can kiss my ASS. Their vaccination rate there, as Westney pointed out, is 18.7%. It's among the lowest in the state. Mm-hmm. Again, let's not make it political. And I'm not gonna blame Trump on this one. I know that, and I say that because then people will shut their ears. President Trump got the vaccine. So if you're holding out saying, well, President Trump doesn't think it's important, or I don't trust the CDC, President Trump did get the vaccine. And but here's my question for you and for Chef too.
Okay.
Because this was a good one. Remember, you've got to get up to 70 or 80% to reach herd immunity. Are we as a country just too stubborn, or is there anything that we can get 80% of us to agree on? Can you think of anything?
No. No, and here's why. Because there's money in this for some. There's people that actually make more money to continue with this. For an example, how can you spend the entire time talking about how this pandemic is not real, this the COVID, it's a hoax, it's nothing more than the flu, but yet you're the first one to get the vaccine?
Yeah, that's always so ironic.
That makes now I tell you, now check this out.
Or hypocritical.
If you are consistent and you continue to tell people that listen to you that this is no big deal and COVID is not really what everybody's saying it is, then you should be the first one that says, I'm not getting the vaccine. So what ends up happening, unfortunately, is this.
I'm going to disagree on that one. Okay, go ahead. But
ends up happening is the people that have the platforms out there, they get the vaccines. Meanwhile, the people that are listening, they're thinking that they don't get the vaccine. So then you have all of this misinformation about what's going on out there.
Yeah. The only reason I say I disagree is because, again, we want to get to herd immunity. So I don't care if someone has been, you know, harping about how they don't want to get it and then they get it anyway. That's better news for all of us because they're part of the group that has now been vaccinated.
I don't think herd immunity needs to necessarily be a national thing. In Western Washington, for example, if we reach 70% to 80%, and there are people that travel here from Eastern Washington from other states, or just people who haven't been vaccinated, that doesn't really affect our local herd immunity. What this really does is it hurts the communities in which there is not herd immunity.
I 100% agree, but I have no intention of staying only in Western Washington.
But if you're vaccinated,
yes,
you're probably
yes.
fine.
Yes. Okay. One other thing, though. Chelan County. Okay, I have said before, Lake Chelan is my favorite place in the entire state. I'm glad to say that they have a nearly 40% vaccination rate. Good for you, Chelan County. Okay, if you've been to SeaTac Airport lately, this is not going to come as a surprise. The number of passengers being screened by TSA late last month was up by nearly 280% from a year ago. A lot of people, of course, traveling for Easter and spring break. Still, that number is nearly 60% lower than the same time in 2019.
Wow. Ursula, did you see these lines?
Yes.
Have you seen how crazy it is? People are traveling. Now, hold on. Hold on. Let me go ahead and say this. I got to say that I'm part of the problem when it comes to everybody jumping on airplanes, because I'm saying that because I shared with you. When did I leave and go see my son? Mid-March.
Yeah.
I went to go do that. That's number one. And number two, I believe that one of the reasons why there's been a huge uptick in traveling is there's been an uptick in vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been more of a, which is totally
people
understandable.
Are taking their calculated risks and saying, you know what, I've been cooped up long enough. And just a word of warning, though, too. Seattle and Bellevue school districts, they're going to be on spring break next week. So SeaTac expects it to be the busiest week of the month at the airport. The Seattle Times headline reads, Seattle area housing market is on steroids. We are still in the middle of a pandemic, but you'd never know based on how much housing prices have skyrocketed all over the Puget Sound region. The Northwest Multiple Listing Service says the median price for a house sold in March in King County was nearly $825,000. Get this. This is a 10% jump in a month. Prices in all four counties have jumped since the start of the pandemic, 17% in Pierce County, 22% in Snohomish. And on the east side, the median home price is up 30% from last year.
Ursula, I want you to do me a favor.
Yeah.
I want you just gave us the news.
Yes.
And I want you to respond in two different ways.
Okay.
I want you to respond with, okay. I want you to respond with Ursula in early 2020.
Yes.
And I want you to respond with Ursula today. Go.
Okay. Ursula in early 2020 would have said, man, this is awesome because we have a house. We bought it, you know, in 2000 and it's worth so much more. This is great. It's an investment. It's our biggest investment. So this is good news. So every time it would go up, I'd be like, ah, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Ursula today looks at it and says, this is not good news.
And why?
Because it is keeping so many people from realizing their dream of home ownership. Mm-hmm. It is for this next generation, unless you are a high-tech worker who has $400,000 to put down, you're never going to buy a home. Mm-hmm. It's pricing. It's making neighborhoods less diverse. Mm-hmm. And I saw a quote here in Pierce County. It used to be that you could go to Pierce County where you could find, or maybe Snohomish County, where you could find a little more house or maybe just even break into the market.
Right.
Pretty soon, they say, it's going to be very difficult to find any home in Pierce County for $350,000 or less. I would say maybe that's even the case right now.
Isn't the most important reason, though, kind of a selfish one for most people, in that if my home gets too expensive and my property taxes skyrocket to the point where I can't pay them anymore, if I need to downsize my home or move in retirement, I will no longer be able to afford to live in the same community that I've lived in for my entire adult life.
Come on, Chef.
Yeah.
Come on.
And that is a huge one, but that's not my case. So, but that's a huge one.
Yeah.
You know, yep. It's just going to mean we are paying more in property taxes.
Right.
Hey, Ursula.
Yeah.
Do we have a homelessness problem here?
Yes, we do. I mean, but our homelessness problem is so complex. It's not just because housing prices are going up, but that is a big part of it, too. And I think the more these housing prices are out of control like that, yes, we are going to have less of a chance of ever addressing our homelessness crisis. Yes. Okay, we only have very little time.
Hey!
Like 1 minute. Okay.
Hey.
If you're looking to de-stress, there's a new report out today that says two cities in Western Washington are among the 10 most relaxed cities in the entire country. And they are, drum roll.
Go ahead.
Bellevue and Seattle.
You know.
Okay, this study. Okay. Let's just put it this way. The study was done by, I had to say, okay, what's the source? Like I always ask you, what's
the source?
Source? Lawn Starter, a lawn care services company. So good job, Lawn Starter. You got yourself in the news.
And I'll say how it could be a little bit accurate. Seattle area is the only place that I know where people walking around with blood pressure 100 over 42. Y'all got some low blood pressure around here.
Everybody
I know back home in Chicago got that HP, that high blood pressure.
Well, they do say the percentage of adults with high blood pressure, that's one of the metrics.
Yeah.
Access to spas and wellness centers.
Yes.
The average length of a work day. Okay, Chef.
I have a more credible reason.
Yeah.
You said this is by a lawn care company?
Yes.
No one does here in Western Washington do really enjoy their grass.
That's a good one. Yes, it is legal now. Okay, still ahead. Some big changes aimed at more police accountability. Our reporter Hannah Scott will join us next. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. He may have to let the game. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show, Thursday morning edition. Several police accountability bills have now been approved by the State House and Senate, and more are on the docket today.
This legislation establishes a much stronger state authority to hold police officers accountable for egregious misconduct and patterns of repeated misconduct.
Kyra Radio's Hannah Scott covers Olympia, and she joins us live now. Hey, Hannah.
Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning. So how does this particular bill keep the so-called bad apples from just moving into another department?
This is called the decertification bill. It's from Senator Jamie Peterson, and there's a decertification process for law enforcement officers, and it's basically like with a doctor or a nurse, if they perform poorly or bad behavior or something like that, they lose their license, right? So there's a process for that. There has been for police officers for some time. It's just very rarely used. So this is a really expansive bill that lays out exactly what that's going to be like. Generally, if it's only so far ever really focused on officers who use deadly force, and if they misuse it, this expands it to a tiered system. So if you lie, if you have show bias or any kind of bad behavior like that, there's a point system, and it depends on what you do. You could be automatically decertified, which means you can't be a cop in Washington State anymore. There's a lot of times that I've been told by the sponsor of these bills that officers are in trouble at wherever the department is that they work, and they are going through their appeals process or whatever it might be for discipline. They kind of see the writing on the wall, what's coming for them. And it's been so far that they can leave, they can quit before they get fired or whatever might happen. And they can laterally move to another department in the state because there's not a lot of tracking and data collection statewide. So there's another bill that addresses that. And then there's also significantly more background checks in the hiring of officers in this particular bill as well.
America saw George Floyd, and it's been talked about. The video has been seen by so many. And we also saw the other cops who stood by and actually did nothing as they saw Derek Chauvin have his knee on the neck for 9 minutes, 29 seconds. What did the legislature do about the duty to intervene?
That has also passed now, both the House and the Senate, and is called just that, the duty to intervene bill. So a couple of things there. One, it's definitely would be meant to prevent anything like you saw there with George Floyd, where all those officers just stood around. It requires an officer who witnesses another officer, whether that's a coworker in their own department or some other department, who witnesses an officer using excessive force or acting in a way that they think is excessive force to intervene, to get in there and to break that up. And also they are required to report to the supervisor or the agency that the officer works for any type of misconduct, not even just use of force, but anything like that.
And Hannah, earlier this year, actually, we've spoken with former King County Sheriff Sue Rahr several times, and she has talked about how the arbitration process can keep some so-called bad cops on the job when their own chief wants them out. And she explained that both sides have to agree on an arbitrator. And then because of that, there's basically like a 50-50 track record of approving or rejecting firings. It becomes too difficult. What is happening with arbitration now?
So there were two bills coming out at the beginning of session. One would have eliminated the use of arbitration, period, in these situations. So it wouldn't have been an issue. It didn't have a lot of chance and is dead right out of the water. The other bill that has now passed and should be heading to the governor now is from Senator Wynn. And basically this lays out this arbitration selection process, and it goes through the Public Employment Relations Commission. They pick 9 to 18 arbitrators for the law enforcement grievance process. And they rotate them throughout the year. So it's the PERC that's in charge of that entire process. And it's also, there's a lot of other limitations to it. You're not allowed to, in the bill, you're not allowed to have it. They have to be completely trained. They can't be, you know, associated with the law enforcement agency. You can't have the favorites, which is what the concern was before, where you'd see the favoritism sometimes.
One of the things that stands out to me as these bills are coming to pass is there's a good possibility that we taxpayers might stop paying as much out like we have been used to doing for so many years. Something happens, we taxpayers pay for it. Another thing happens, we taxpayers pay for it. Talk about that part of it, Hannah.
And sure, that's definitely possible. I mean, how many have we seen in just the last year, multi-million dollar lawsuits? I'm assuming you're talking about like use of force lawsuits against various departments. They happen all the time. We just saw the one that was settled a couple of weeks ago in the Tommy Lay case in King County. And there's been multiple in Snohomish County and several. So that could make a difference. I think the overall idea here, though, is to really reform what policing looks like and make sure what happened to George Floyd and some of the other things we've seen really brought to the surface that there's changes that are still needed. Seattle, for instance, had done a significantly good job over the last 10 years, making improvements from where they were in 2010. But it's still not enough. There's more that needs to be done. And they've been really good at the work on this in Olympia. A couple of these bills that have passed have had bipartisan support for the most part. One of them that was very impressive passed a couple of days ago was the tactics bill, which bans chokeholds, bans neck restraints, no-knock warrants. It also limits the use of tear gas and does a few other things. It was a much different bill. It went much further at the beginning, and they came to the middle with the Fraternal Order of Police backing it and many others. So really impressive work to shift what it is we thought was the norm.
Hannah, and I'm so glad that you pointed that out as well, that there was bipartisan support and there has been progress made. So that is certainly positive. Thank you so much, Hannah Scott. We look forward to the next time you join us again.
All right. My pleasure, guys.
Okay, still ahead. Gee, you know, I had a lot of time to think yesterday.
Yeah, you did. And we need to talk.
Yeah.
And Ursula has something to say based on what she heard from myself and Dre's as we were doing our show. So stick around for what she has to say next. You guys are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Thursday to all of you. Coming up at 10:06, Michael Medved will join us. Usually it's Medved Fridays, but Michael has something to do tomorrow, so therefore he wants to come in and hang out with us at 10:06. But right now, Ursula, we need to talk, and actually, it's you that need to talk.
Well, yesterday, so I enjoyed listening to the show, and as you know, I got my second vaccine, and so I had the day off yesterday because I was told, you know, I might be dealing with symptoms. And I got an email, and it was from someone that I had met about a year ago and had a pleasant meeting. And then he told me, I've been listening to your show regularly since we met. And then he says he's been a long, long time Kyra listener. But he said he feels like he wants to stop listening because of how we have handled the Ed Troyer story. And specifically, he called out Dre's because Dre's said, I think he said yesterday when you were discussing it, that he thinks Troyer should step down. And he also said that when we discussed the story first, and he was filling in for you. So I reached out to you, G, and asked, have you ever called for Ed to resign?
Not one time.
Right. Have you ever called Ed racist?
Not one time.
Okay. And so neither have I. And I will go on to and I just, I've really been thinking about, because this has been such a difficult story to cover. And I say that because I have always considered Ed a friend and someone who I've worked with for over 20 years. So for me to be critical of several things that have happened recently has been very difficult. But never once have I said I think he is racist, because I actually don't think he is. Based on my knowledge and what I know of him, I don't think he is. However, I do think he's made two big mistakes. And that was one in repeating a false narrative about the Manny Ellis case. And not everyone's real clear why was Ed Troyer, as the Pierce County spokesman, talking about the Manny Ellis case, which is a Tacoma case. And the reason he was is because Pierce County was initially handling the investigation, because obviously conflict of interest, if it's a Tacoma police officers involved, you can't have the same agency investigating their own people. So Ed was doing, and one of the biggest difficulties was for me when he came onto our show and said something and repeated something, and we brought it up, and I didn't feel like he corrected it. And I think he would have been better off just saying, you know what, this is an active case investigation, and I, you know, there are discrepancies in what witnesses are saying versus what police are saying in the report. So it got me thinking, though, about this whole situation. And maybe people missed an op-ed that Ed wrote over the weekend. And I just want to encourage Sheriff Troyer that if he's listening right now, that he needs to listen to the people who are saying, Ed, don't let pride get in the way. Take a look. You've had an excellent career. And I know there's always this, well, you know, someone who's worked 30 years, how can you possibly, you know, now say that he is a bad person? No one's saying he's a bad person, but you can say you've made mistakes. I have worked here at Cairo for over 30 years. If someone tells me, Ursula, you have made a horrible mistake or two horrible mistakes that maybe affect an entire community, could have had a terrible outcome, I'm not going to stand and say, look, I have worked 30 years and had a perfect record. You cannot criticize me. So I just ask that when you, and by the way, I don't take kindly if someone says, I'm never going to listen to you if you continue with, that's not going to affect whether I cover something or not. I mean, our whole deal is about trying to be fair. And so I would just encourage Ed to listen to those who are saying, stop and listen. Maybe look to see, reflect, see where it is that you could have done, try to understand where someone would have felt like you were racial profiling, even though you're not racist, even though you've had no history of being racist. Take a look and see how would it feel to be that delivery driver and to, you know, have someone, where did you go wrong? Instead of saying, you know what, this is what we do, this is our policy, I would do it again. That gives people no hope that there's going to be change. And so I want to help Ed, because I did read his op-ed, and there was a part of it that stood out to me where he said, these events have provided an incredible learning experience that will make me a better person and a better sheriff. As someone who has made a career out of talking, I know now that I need to do a better job of listening. There's nothing wrong with saying, I made a mistake. I understand now where you are coming from, and I need to do better. This is something that we all need to be able to do.
Good stuff. Coming up next, Michael Medved will join the show. You guys, stick around. It is the Gene Ursula Show.